people who love them.
Hello, welcome back. This is The Thing About Cars. It is a beautiful day here in Atlanta. We are recording, as usual, at Strongbox West. This is a great co-working facility. Check it out if you get a chance. Today at the table, we've got a full house again with
Ben,
Frank,
Eric,
Becca,
Rob,
and I'm Mickey. And let's just jump right into it. Rob, you had something that we put up on the board today about a bad car buying experience, except I get the idea that this is not a bad car buying experience in the same way that the rest of us would look at it.
Right, it's not. Right. It's heartbreak, missed cars, missed car buying experience.
What's yours?
The one, this is 20 years this has burned into my soul. I was visiting a friend of mine at Penn State. He was going to grad school. So I was staying for a few days. I was on whatever break I had. So I had some time hanging out at his apartment while he's in class, and I'm looking through local want ads. And I come across this is before the internet, a 69 Datsun, not a Fairlady. It was a Fairlady. Those little MG sort of convertibles that they had. Beautiful. Chrome.
The 1600 2-liter version.
Bingo. Right. I think this was a 69 or 68. So it was a 1600. The small color pictures and the paper want ad press looked gorgeous. Red, little chrome bumpers before the later ones. Everything there works perfectly. And something ridiculously affordable, like $2,500. And back then, for some reason, I actually had that sort of money that I could spend on things. I guess that was before I got married. So I call this guy immediately. He's like, yeah, have the car. I'm like, anything I need to know? Because you're about a 45-minute drive away. I'll come see it. He's like, no, car runs, car drives. I drive it regularly. I'm moving on to another project. It needs nothing. Come see it. I'll be there. I hop in the car. I hang up the phone. I hop in the car. I drive the half hour or so to see him. As I'm pulling into his driveway, I see the car is there. It's gorgeous. It's even prettier than he described it. And he's shaking hands with somebody else.
No!
I drove up to the handshake.
That's really crappy.
That's why you need to break the speed limit.
That's just like saying. Seeing your girlfriend kissing somebody else.
Yeah. Jeez, it's worse.
Yeah. It's
that is much worse. Exactly. You can find other people. The cars are much harder.
The cars are much harder.
My dad had one kind of like that, actually, when I was in about first grade. There was somebody in our neighborhood. We lived in a big subdivision. We didn't know everybody, so we didn't know who was selling this car. But somebody in the neighborhood had this was about 1974, had a Jaguar XK120 with a for sale sign in their front yard. And my dad was already in the Sunbeams, so, you know, that was just the next level of progression. He drove by it for days and said, nah, the guy probably wants too much. And he gave up on it, and then one day the car disappeared. And then the next day, as he's pulling up to the office, a coworker drives up in that Jag. And Dad said, well, what did you pay for it? And the guy said something like $800 or $900. Which even in 74 wasn't bad.
Jeez.
That's kind of like this Bronco that I've been drooling over. It was so far away. It was out in this place in Georgia called Bremen. There's no highway that leads out to Bremen. It's all country back road getting from IMAT to Bremen. I had been trying to get back out there. I finally get the guy on the phone, and I call him and say, I'm on the way. Can you pull it out? Because it had been buried in this warehouse-type place. And he said, I just sold it yesterday.
Yeah.
I just, $4,000 for this Bronco.
That hurts.
Some of them restored are going more than $40,000.
So there's a couple things up on the board that I think we could segue to from here.
I'll start with the changes at Ford. Apparently, they are totally redoing their lineup. They are getting rid of basically all sedans. They're no longer going to manufacture Taurus, Focus, Fusion, what have you, all those cars except the Mustang. The Mustang is going to be the only non-SUV available from Ford. I can't remember the year that they're aiming for right now, but I'm really kind of torn with it because it does say, you know, yay, Mustang. But I don't see it being a great move. How many times have people tried to get away, people, meaning the auto industry, tried to get away from SUVs and trucks when there's been a fuel crisis? Mm-hmm. We know it's just going to keep happening with fuel. How great is that you're building your whole company up on gas guzzlers, but I know some of their ideas is also, are also to switch over to the EcoBoost, to electric. And speaking of which, for, geez, I don't know how many months now, there have been these pictures floating around, and they're concept pictures or rendition pictures, I guess. So it's not like an actual photo. It's been circulating the Mustang clubs and various car groups, and it's been kind of blown off as, haha, isn't that funny? Oh, look what somebody did. Just some of the really terrible, you know, kind of like when somebody takes a cord out and sticks a truck bed to it kind of joke. And I recently found out that this is not a joke. It's an actual idea that I didn't see a timeline, I didn't see a year, but it's an actual idea in progress, a Mustang SUV that just to add insult to injury would be electric. It's not a bad looking car. It's another case of bad badging, though. Don't stick the Mustang name on it, and it would be a perfectly reasonable looking SUV. Just don't stick the pony on it.
But they have precedent for that. Look at the Thunderbird. The Thunderbird was born as a Corvette competitor, and on paper and in the flesh, the first Thunderbirds were Corvette competitors. Mm-hmm. Two-door, rear-wheel drive, sports car.
And it went a totally different direction.
They got huge. They got land yacht size, and they sold a ton of them. Mm-hmm. More popular than the Corvette ever was.
So is the objection to a Mustang SUV, I mean, I hear multiple objections to a Mustang SUV, because if speed is the issue, you can go extremely fast with an electric motor.
No, it's not speed, it's not the look of the SUV, it's the bastardization of Mustang. Right. It's the label.
I can understand it, though. I mean, it's people thinking outside the box, trying to come up with something new and different again. Years ago, they did it when they made a Ranchero. Yeah. You had the front end of a Torino or a Ford and a pickup truck in the back. And what did we do before we had SUVs? Before the Ford Explorer is the one that really blew SUVs into out of the sky. I mean, everybody now has an SUV, but they're looking for something new. What's the next new niche? Everybody has an SUV. Mm-hmm. Everybody. What could be new and different that would fit and be able to do what they need for a daily basis and have it look sporty and stuff? Do SUVs really look sporty? Not really.
They can, and there's nothing wrong with SUVs, and I'm fine with them. I'm unhappy about them branding one as a Mustang. Kind of like what Rob and I were talking about earlier, not recording, just the branding of the GTO killed it. The car would have been fine. It has a good power plant, had a good power plant. It was putting the wrong badge on the wrong car. It doesn't fit what that name had built up. It's like turning the Hulk into a woman in comics.
I can't believe Ford would ever really call it the Mustang or Mustang something. Or
it's
Mustang.
Even got, in the renditions, it's even got the running pony right up front. And it's got the grill and the headlights. And I've made jokes in the past about Mustang should break off from Ford and offer different things. But in reality, that works best when it's from the beginning.
Well, to your point about fuel efficiency, though, if Ford as a company is making a decision to get rid of their smaller cars and just make trucks and SUVs.
Small, mid-size, you name it.
Right. I mean, that decision also sort of is mind-boggling to me.
Yeah. A lot of their, what they're calling SUVs, are going to be their European, the Festiva or Fiesta platform vehicles. So they're going to be small engine, fuel efficient, but they'll just be taller, four-door, two-box constructions.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're the marketing guys there, along with their accounting guys, they're not dumb. They've got to show numbers. When was the last time somebody got really excited about buying a Ford sedan?
Sorry, I'm raising my hand over here. I'm sorry about that. But, yeah, that's, you kind of touched on something else. An awful lot of trucks and SUVs are no longer built on truck platforms. They are essentially cars with the shell of a truck or a shell of an SUV. So
isn't this sort of Chrysler's problem? at the moment too. If when's the last time anyone looked forward to buying a Ford?
I think Chrysler has bigger problems at the moment.
Hold on. Let me finish. So if you're looking at Ford and you're saying when's the last time anyone looked forward to buying a Ford sedan, isn't Ford's job then to design a nicer sedan that people want?
Ford's not the only company out there.
Right.
People get excited about cars in general, then they look at what the brands are. I think that modern buyers are less brand agnostic. The days of being, I'm a Chevy guy, I'm a Ford guy.
Right.
Not so much. For the mainstream, there are still those. But the mainstream where the bread and butter is.
It's like giving up. It's like somebody entering the marketplace to say, look, Chevy's already got the market with the Malibu, therefore I'm not going to try to beat them at their game with anything else.
No, it's not making things that don't make them money. If they can't sell these cars, in our last podcast, if they have to force people to spend $200 a month just to take the damn thing off the lot, why would they bother to make that? They make a ton more money off things that people want to buy.
And what people want to buy, it's changing a lot from our generation. So when we look for cars, we can't find what we're looking for. They're not going to have a whole assembly line with what we like when they've got a whole new generation coming up and they want something totally different. Mm-hmm. So it's...
And a certain amount of laziness, I think, in there, too. I think the manufacturers are funneling us all into
manufacturers
this
lazy?
Sort of bland box. They're going to have a different name on the outside, but other than that, hey, what's the difference?
Right. So is Chrysler going to die? Just to segue from
I'm afraid. It was sounding like it. They had a financial backer that pulled out recently, right?
I don't know.
And Fiat's leaving, I think.
Fiat's gone. Fiat's already decided they're leaving the American market.
It is not sounding good for Chrysler. But it was Chrysler, Dodge, Jeep was doing okay, and who else?
The Ram truck.
But Dodge itself is, I think, doing better than Chrysler is. So if Chrysler dies...
Well, this kind of lumped up that Chrysler and Dodge were both in peril, but that Jeep could split off and be on its own. And I think they mentioned somebody else could split off if Chrysler Dodge died, but they did mention Dodge. And
what's going to happen to Mopar if that happens, you know? So.
Mm-hmm. Our question, nobody knows what a Mopar is anyway.
Yeah.
They should come out with a brand Mopar.
It's almost like Chrysler's already done what Ford is saying they're going to do, except nobody noticed.
Right.
There's only one Dodge sedan. That's it. Everything else is trucks.
It's the Pacifica. No, there's two. You're right. There's two. That's right. I'm thinking of.
Well, there's a coupe and a sedan.
I'm crossing wires here.
Yeah,
Dodge.
Yeah, there's a Charger, Challenger.
Yes.
That's it for regular cars.
200. They have the 200.
Well, the Chrysler.
Are they still doing that?
No, the Chrysler killed.
No, yeah, I saw the 200 on the list that was still made. The 200 and then one other
the
sedan.
The Pacifica minivan.
That's not a sedan. I'm sorry. I was trying to go one step at a time. I was on sedans.
Well,
sorry. Wasn't it the 300 and the 200?
That was the Fiat. It was made by Fiat.
We have this internet-capable device here. Let's look up what Chrysler's...
So what it didn't tell me, since Mickey's looking something up, y'all were mentioning Fiat over here. Is it just broken off? Has somebody acquired Fiat? What's happening with Fiat right now?
Well, Fiat's still the biggest car company in Italy. They're still a big, huge conglomerate. They've got Alfa Romeo, Maserati, Chrysler, and...
Ferrari.
No, that's been spun off.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, but in Sergio Marchionne's mad quest to homogenize, I'm hearing rumors that Maserati and Alfa Romeo are going to be combined into one brand.
I could kind of see that.
So
actually,
looking at the Chrysler website, they only sell three things right now. The Chrysler 300, Chrysler Pacifica, and a Pacifica Hybrid.
And the 300 is the same platform as the Charger Challenger.
Is it?
It's that old Mercedes platform.
Right.
So you can't get a Dart any longer or any of the
right.
Things. Well, this is just Chrysler. This is not the Dodge website.
I got you.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Dart is gone, I'm pretty sure, though.
Okay, that's another case of bad badging. It was a Dodge Neon with a Dart logo slapped on it.
That could have been a good car.
It was on an Alfa Romeo platform.
I mean, it's an Alfa, yeah.
It was a Neon. Look at one. Seriously, it's a Neon.
You're just hating on my
Neon. What?
That's a whole other story.
At Chrysler, okay, what excites you today that you would say, oh, I'd consider buying that from Chrysler, anything?
Yeah, a Hellcat or a Demon, but who isn't excited by that?
Okay.
Oh.
That's Dodge.
Well, Chrysler doesn't have anything other than Pacifica and 300.
And
300. A 300 SRT8 was always
exactly.
It's
exciting.
It's a decent car, but I have issues with the looks, but it's a decent platform.
The 300?
Yes.
Yeah, the 300 is just a full-size sedan.
And, okay. I was mistaken when I said Chrysler, because when I think of Chrysler, I think of Dodge.
Right.
The umbrella. Umbrella.
So we do need to separate Chrysler from Dodge. And Chrysler only sells those three models. Dodge sells seven. And they are the Charger, the Challenger, the Journey, the Durango, a Grand Caravan, the Demon, and trucks.
The few things that they do still make, they do have very interesting versions of each. So you can get any Charger or Challenger is an interesting car no matter what. They all have adequate power, and the high-performance ones are really exciting. Mm-hmm. The brand-new Jeep, the JL, I drove one recently. That thing is amazing.
Really?
Inside and out, it went full bore, high-tech, modern, while still keeping all of the important Jeep stuff. They are amazing.
I got into a Wrangler Limited X recently, despite me hating four doors on a Jeep. Mm-hmm. You get inside that thing, it was gorgeous.
Sure. I wouldn't kick one out of my garage for leaking oil.
The Jeep is one of the few lines that attracts people that are 16 years old and attracts people that are 80, 90.
Yes, that's right.
Right. It never gets old. And you can drive one without feeling like, you're not going to be the 70-year-old guy in a new Corvette and people are going to point and ask about what you're compensating for. So those are all interesting cars. The Pacifica is really, if you're going to have a minivan, it's a really, really nice minivan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
it's
one of the few luxury minivans you can get.
That was one of the, I can't remember if it was the Pacifica. No, it was a Dodge label. It was the Dodge high-end, so probably maybe a twin car or something.
Are they still doing the minivan?
I don't know. We rented one when I went up to Michigan with my mom and my kids last year. And I think we had kind of touched on it at one point. That thing, it was cushy, bells and whistles. Mm-hmm. It was totally decked out, totally expensive.
Sure. And the last thing is they're talking about bringing the Viper back whole new thought, more conventional, a V8 instead of a V10, maybe getting into more reasonable dimensions.
If they actually
do that, I think it would be great with all the shenanigans going on and the financial difficulties. I'd be surprised if it actually came about.
So specific.
But does Dodge then carry Chrysler? Are the names too intertwined to be extractable? Or if Fiat's leaving and if Chrysler looks to be on its last legs with no financial support, what's going to happen?
Well, the smart money would be to get rid of all the brand confusion, the same way that GM got rid of Old Zavala and Pontiac, same cars, different branding, mm-hmm. different dealerships for no reason. If you turn the 300 replacement into a high-end luxury Dodge that had all of the same, no concessions to Dodge pricing versus Chrysler pricing, mm-hmm. that would be the way to do it. And then to convince people that you can have a luxury Dodge,
right?
That you can that you can park in your driveway proudly,
which they do with the Caravan.
Yeah, but a person can justify a high-end Caravan for its utility. A high-end sedan, you have to justify that why you buy a luxury car, not just for the luxury aspect of it that's legitimately there, but for the prestige of the brand name.
So just a couple weeks ago when I was reading up on all this, I wrote to Chrysler and I said, hey, Chrysler, let my Thing About Cars crew actually run your company for a month. And they did not write back.
I'm surprised.
Yeah.
I'm shocked.
Yeah, totally shocked. But, let's move on to another question here just because I know we're getting a little advanced in time. This question comes from a fan, and just because I think we're all going to get into our 14-year-old brains and snicker a bit. This one's about double hump heads. And the question is, I would just like, this is from my friend Jillian. I hope I'm pronouncing that name correctly. Forgive me if I'm not. I've known this person online for a number of years, sort of a pen pal. She says, I'd just like to learn what makes double hump heads desirable and understand the history a bit. My dad and brother worked on an old Camaro that had double humped heads, and I've always heard car guys say they're the best, but I don't understand why, and I'd like to.
Actually, I am familiar with them, but I was never into old Chevrolet, Mopar, and Ford.
Oh.
So honestly, I've never done any research into it.
So you're saying the double hump is a Chevrolet thing, which is I did not know.
General Motors, I believe.
It was Chevrolet. Back then it was.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. But yeah, I never got into any hot rodding and GM stuff. I was technically Mercury, not Ford, and Mopar. So I could explain the difference between Cleveland heads and Windsor heads and what a Boss motor is actually just putting those interchangeable parts on each other for the 351.
Well, forgive me. I thought it was a universal watch. I just learned something. I thought it was universal, and it's not. So how then do we answer Jillian's question?
Well, they were back in the 60s and 70s, the General Motors line was separated. So if you had Chevy engines, you had Pontiac engines, they were separate, mm-hmm. and they were not interchangeable. It was Chevrolet that had the double hump heads. The double hump heads came on their high-performance small block motors. It was not a big block cylinder head. It was only a small block cylinder head. Typically, initially, they came out on some of the higher output Corvette engines. The high-performance 327s, maybe typically like a 350-horse 327, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
And for a cast iron cylinder head, they were the best that you could buy at that time. Today's technology has far exceeded what you could do. Today you can buy some very nice aluminum or cast iron aftermarket heads that flow and perform much better than a double hump head.
Oh.
But the double hump heads are valuable for people that are doing restorations on a car from the 60s or 70s. If you're doing the restoration on a Corvette and it has to be using factory original type parts, mm-hmm. the double hump head was very desirable and still is today to some extent if you're trying to restore something.
So here's the question, why do they call it double hump?
On the end of the cylinder head, there's like a V like this, almost looks like a little, like two pyramids almost.
Ah, okay.
And it was a casting thing. And it had to do, the difference between, I can't tell you what the differences are in the heads, the regular head versus a double hump head. I don't know if the valves were the same size or maybe they were different or was the porting a little bit different. But
okay.
Maybe it's something to look into for specifics in the future.
Well,
Sorry. No, I was going to kind of take it over a different way. I was just going to say I've been interested in twisted wedge heads. But you talk to people about that and they look at you like, I'm sorry, go ahead.
So Hot Rod News actually wrote up a very interesting article, and I've only just thumbed through it. Chevrolet double hump heads, the same but not equal. The history given here is that says, when it comes to old school stock car racers and stock cylinder heads, Chevrolet's long-running double hump cylinder heads have always been the gold standard. And it goes on to say that, it says the heads got their nickname because of a raised identification shape on the end, like Frank is saying. It's two half ovals connected by a straight bar, most easily described as two humps. These heads appeared on 327 and 350 cubic inch engines across most of the 1960s. They generally have smaller chambers for the high octane unleaded fuel readily available at the time, smaller intake ports and valves that measured either 1.94 for the intake and 1.5 for the exhaust, or 2.02 and 1.60 respectively. That's what made them very popular in street stock and pure stock classes.
See, I was going to make a joke about the double hump just being inspired by some Playboy bunny, but then I lost the joke at smaller intake valves.
You know what, though? Maybe we can...
Something else to edit, though, Mickey.
I don't know. We might leave that in.
And maybe we can...
Are you compensating with the size of your intake valves?
Maybe we can pay for those new mics we bought if we bring out a line of stick-on double humps for posers.
That's right.
That's 5 horsepower.
We'll get right on that. So that's it. We're way over time, but I don't know that we need to actually quit.
He's gonna cut out all my smart assery anyway.
Small intake port. I'm cutting that out. That's
why. Don't cut out my small intake port. Come on. The kids won't get it.
All right.
The parents can say, "I'll tell you when you're older."
Thank you, as always, for listening to us. We are The Thing About Cars, recording as always in Strong Box West in Atlanta. Check us out at The Thing About Cars on Facebook, and hopefully in the next few weeks, thethingaboutcars.com, our website, will be back up. There's a good chance we might actually put our podcasts on the website this time. I haven't mentioned that before, but there's stuff happening. And I guess that's about it. Anybody else got anything else real quick?
My congratulations to the person with the double hump head question. That was a very good question.
That was an excellent question.
It was a unique question.
So please, do send us questions. We do enjoy hearing from folks. And just be careful out there. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening. This has been The Thing About Cars. We'll see you on the road.